Some say it's an important milestone pushing Egypt towards a new political era, but others, notably among them the Muslim Brotherhood, say the new draft constitution to be put to a referendum within months is a step backwards, especially since the new draft is seen as giving sweeping powers to the military and banning political parties based on religions. Is Egypt headed to a new era of democracy or further rallies and violent crackdowns? This is the debate.
Egypt's 50-member Constituent Assembly has finalized a new draft constitution. It will be handed to interim President Adli Mansour on Tuesday, who's expected to set a date for a referendum on the charter. The draft calls for elections, parliamentary or presidential, within 90 days after the adoption of the constitution. For the Egyptian military, the new constitution is a major milestone in its roadmap after the ouster of Mohamed Morsi on July the 3rd. But the Muslim Brotherhood says the development is rather a tragedy. The Brotherhood has already rejected the charter, slamming interim authorities for trying to distort Egypt's illegitimate constitution, adopted during Morsi's presidency. Meanwhile, the new charter has raised criticism from democracy advocates for increasing powers awarded to the military and the president. It will also forbid the formation of parties based on religion. As the political wrangling continues, there is no sign of stability in the Arab country, as anti-government protests continue unabated. On Monday, clashes once again broke out between security forces and protesters in the city of Alexandria. Police fired tear gas at the people who were demanding the abolition of a controversial law that restricts the right to protest. Egypt's military coup ousted Morsi in July. Since then, his supporters have been staging near-daily protests calling for his reinstatement. Many are now wondering if the new constitution will work for Egypt, where Morsi supporters refuse to recognize the current government and are expected to campaign against the scheduled referendum.
You're watching The Debate. Joining us now live from Cairo is political commentator Mr. Saeed Sadegh, and with the Africa desk of the Executive Intelligence Review, Lawrence Freeman is with us live from Baltimore. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'll put my first question to our guest in Cairo, Mr. Sadegh. The constitution adopted during Morsi's tenure was also put to a public referendum and was approved by the people. So isn't this stepping backwards in a sense?
No. Revolutions go through waves. And the most important slogan of the Egyptian revolution in 2011 was no to a Socratic state and no to a military state. The 2012 constitution violated the principles and the objectives of the Egyptian revolution. It was basically an attempt to create an Islamist state, a Socratic state. And also, it did not take much turnout. I mean, the support for that constitution was very low. It failed in Cairo, like President Morsi was not elected in Cairo. In developing countries, if you do not win the capital, if you do not win the media, if you do not win the state institution trust, you are bound to fail. And so it was expected that President Morsi would not continue his term because he was working against the Egyptian revolution and its principles. And people did not forget that President Morsi came from an organization in which its supreme guide said, to hell with Egypt, and nobody apologized. And in fact, people began to feel that the national security is going to be affected. Egypt would become a failed state like Sudan, like Libya, like Syria under that leadership. If you look at national security, he held for the first time in any country's history a secret meeting with Egyptian opposition, and it was broadcast live because his advisors failed to tell him that it should be secret and not to be broadcast. And instead of firing his advisors, he kept them. So he gave everybody a sign that this president and his rule are not fit to continue ruling the country unless we want to be destroyed like any country in the Middle East at the present moment.
Well, let's bring in Mr. Lawrence Freeman as well. Now, Mr. Freeman, a lot of people are saying, looking at the situation now, it would have been maybe a better option for the Muslim Brotherhood to actually take part in the Constituent Assembly rather than boycott it and have its say in this, what's being called the transition period. Would you agree with that?
The organization, the electoral arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, has been outlawed. Individual members of the Muslim Brotherhood can participate in the election process that's now going on. But it's clear that the current government, interim government, has made the decision, with support from many, that the Muslim Brotherhood, as an organization, cannot be part of the political process, and that the Muslim Brotherhood has to essentially be disbanded in order for the country of Egypt to move forward. So my understanding is that this Council of 50 that reviewed the original draft of the Constitution have members on it, of course, who belong to different groups and different parties. And if they ratify the, I believe, ratify this interim Constitution, then there's going to be a referendum that's open to all people of Egypt to vote and decide if they want this to be the new constitution or not. So that is the present roadmap that the Egyptian government is following.
Well, before we move on with the points you raised there, just let's take a look at the content of this constitution, the new draft. Mr. Sadegh, what's being seen as the controversial aspects of this constitution is the power that's been given to the military. I'm just quoting parts that the media have referred to. It leaves the military with unfettered freedom to choose the defense minister from within its rank, grants him immunity for 2 4-year presidential terms. Civilians can be tried in military courts. The military budget is exempt from civil oversight. And parties, of course, will be limited to non-religious. So don't you think these issues within the constitution cannot be seen as progressive?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that you cannot move from extreme autocracy to extreme democracy. Democracy is not an outfit you import from American democracy or Westminster democracy, and then you wear it, and then you are a Democrat. Every country tailors democracy according to its own circumstances. Constitutions are always the result of crisis, disasters, trouble in the country. And we are facing an international war on Egypt, supported by local actors. As you can see, the Qatari government, for example, is sponsoring a TV station to mobilize against the Egyptian government and against the Egyptian people and against the Egyptian revolution. So you cannot at this moment try to dismantle the Egyptian army. If you look at the Arab armies, Arab countries, we have 22 Arab countries. 3 biggest armies are in trouble. 2 armies have already been destroyed, the Syrian and the Iraqi, now the Egyptian army. If I do not protect the Egyptian army in my constitution, do you want me to be like Sudan? Do you want me to be like Somalia in the middle of a disaster? Do you want me to be like Libya, a country without a state in which the intelligence chief is kidnapped, the prime minister is kidnapped by militia? Of course, anybody who is looking at the Egyptian constitution today from his own perspective, from Sweden or Norway, of course, they wouldn't like it. But for us in Egypt, we like the army. We like to have a secure state. We want to be an independent state. We don't want to be a country ruled by militia and gangs.
Well, Mr. Freeman, would you say this is about dismantling the army, as our guest there is saying, or about preventing the army from, you know, getting into the political scene and retaining its political role, as those who are against it are actually concerned about?
Well, the military, as the my colleague from Cairo said, plays a very important role in developing countries throughout the Middle East and throughout Africa. So it's very hard to dismantle these institutions without suffering grave consequences. I think that in this period of transition that Egypt is going through, where they've launched a very powerful war against the Muslim Brotherhood, they're going to keep the military intact to make sure that that weakening of the Muslim Brotherhood is not reversed.
Yes, well, Mr.
And
Freeman,
my reports.
Yes, sorry for jumping in here. Something
my
else.
My reports are from Egypt.
Something else that our guest mentioned in his comments, our guest in Cairo said, was his reference to Qatar. And now Qatar is being seen as standing against countries like Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or Bahrain, members of the GCC. Do you think that with regards to Egypt, these countries are having a direct role on what's happening there?
Well, they have many different roles. Look at, if you go back to the earlier phase, the Saudi Arabia and Qatar were backing the Muslim Brotherhood all the way, including the President of the United States, Barack Obama, was backing the Muslim Brotherhood, and backing Morsi. Those things have now shifted, where in the United States, Senator Kerry, now the Secretary of State, has come out more in favor of the current government, and the Saudi Arabia is fearful now of what could happen inside their own country if the Muslim Brotherhood rises up. So they've switched their position, and now they're supporting the Egyptian government. And I think Turkey and Qatar are still supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. So there's a lot of outside influence. And of course, the IMF and the Western financial system has had their hand in trying to manipulate the situation. What's really necessary for Egypt now is to move forward with a clear program for economic development of the nation as part of regional development of North Africa. This is the central question that I see is going to face the current government, no matter who the candidates turn out to be, because this was the fundamental cause that led to the revolutionary process back in January 2011. And this is what I'm very concerned about.
Well, before we move on with the discussion, let's give our viewers a chance to take a look now at some of the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page, and we'll be back.
Egypt is on the edge because you have Qatar funding the Muslim Brotherhood on one side and the Saudis funding the military on the other. We fail to see that Israel and Saudi Arabia, along with the rest of the Persian Gulf Arab states, enjoy their own oppressive stability. Draft for what when Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood won a fair election? Presidential power should be handed back to Morsi because he is the legitimate president according to the March Egyptian election. Morsi, I salute you. You are the true president of Egypt. When you let political Al-Qaeda, aka Ahwan al-Muslimun, rule, that's what you get.
Well, those were some of the comments posted on our Facebook page. I'll go straight to our guest in Cairo. Mr. Sadek, one of those comments concerned the role of other countries. We were speaking earlier to our guest in the U.S. about that, and you yourself referred to Qatar. Are you seeing now Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, these other countries of the GCC, actually giving this aid and promising aid to Egypt, meaning that they are going to interfere in Egypt's political affairs?
There is no country that is totally independent. It's a big illusion. We are living in an interdependent world. But each country chooses which country they can rely on and can support and which country they don't. Qatar has been classified as the CIA gloves of, it is not looked as a real true Arab country in the sense they care about Arab causes. Qatar is playing a big role, bigger than its real size. They have the biggest American military base in the Gulf, and they have a channel that is trying to destabilize many countries in the area, taking sides. And so it, nobody looks at the situation in Egypt that we will abandon Saudi Arabia because Qatar is against us. Saudi Arabia has more influence on Egypt than Qatar. We have more Egyptians in Saudi Arabia. There is more strategic alliance between Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia also feels that Qatar and America may play a negative role against their own interests. And so it is very natural that you get Egypt, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates together against Qatar and against the Obama administration and its attempt to redo the map of the Middle East.
Mr. Freeman, some people are saying that Saudi Arabia is looking for finding a leading role and playing a leading role now in the Middle East, what with the situation in Syria and now the political turmoil in Egypt. They're saying that it's very ripe now, the time for Saudi Arabia to play a leading role. Do you think that would mean that it wouldn't want Egypt to have political stability? What do you think its policy towards Egypt will be?
Well, right now, and the Saudi position is much bigger than Egypt, but right now, they're supporting the crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood, even though they have supported the Brotherhood in the past, because they're afraid of what could happen inside their own House of Saud. The Saudi government right now is very nasty. They have fueled, paid, organized for this attempted overthrow of the president of Syria. They have played a nasty operation throughout the entire region. And they're under a lot of pressure here in the United States. There is a movement in the US Congress to investigate the role of Saudi Arabia, including Prince Bandar Sultan himself, for their involvement in the terrorist attack in the United States on September 11, 2001. There is a number of congressmen calling for an investigation of classified pages of the 9/11 Commission that would lead to the Saudi role and to Prince Bandar. So you can't trust the Saudis. They're out for their own operation. They believe in an oligarchical kingdom. They have united with the British royal family in the past on their joint geopolitical control of the Middle East. So they're not a reliable partner, and they themselves are in for some very difficult times ahead. So I wouldn't count on them to bail out Egypt.
Yes. Well, we are quickly running out of time. I'd just like to get concluding remarks by both of our guests. The first, Mr. Sadek in Cairo. You said in your remarks, Mr. Sadek, that you can't go from extreme autocracy to extreme democracy. Some would say in response to that, that President Morsi's reign did have problems his tenure, but it was an initial step toward democracy. Maybe we should have given it a chance to move forward based on what you said. But a lot of people are also now suggesting, why shouldn't we put the two constitutions now together and let the Egyptian people decide what to do? Do you think that with this new constitution, we're going to see more turmoil and political violence in Egypt, or Egypt is actually moving forward?
I think it is moving forward. The 2013 constitution is far much better in freedom, in human rights, than the constitution of the former President Morsi. Also, it has a lot of things regarding social justice. Of course, it doesn't meet everything that we want. You know, the objectives of revolution take a long time to realize. Remember, the French Revolution took them so many decades and centuries until they get equality between men and women. But at any rate, we will not take that long. I think the Egyptians today are much more politicized. They know the rights, and they can manage their own democracy without any foreign intervention and advice that are detached from what is happening on the ground. Some people talk about Egyptian democracy, and they don't live in Egypt. They don't understand the local situation. I think Egyptians are carving a very important democracy on their own, and it would be a model in the area. It's not like the Iraqi model through American invasion. It is not like coup d'etat like in Sudan. It is a real true democracy in which you get an accountable government.
And just enough time for Mr. Freeman to elaborate a bit for us, Mr. Freeman, if you may, about the U.S. Role in Egypt as well. We saw John Kerry come to Egypt before this draft constitution was drafted and written. And we are, of course, hearing very contradictory remarks from President Obama, as you said. What do you think?
The United States has a very poor foreign policy in Egypt and throughout Africa and throughout most of the world. There are some people in the government who are trying to push it in a more positive direction. We've seen some of that in the treaty with Iran. We've seen some of that with Kerry's statements in Egypt. But look, overall, the United States and Western Europe are undergoing a massive financial economic collapse. The Europe is dying. And that's why you saw in Ukraine the refusal of the Ukraine government to join with the Europeans. The whole world right now is going to be shaken up by this global financial collapse. And Egypt is going to have to orient itself towards a real economic development policy for its people, growing food, providing energy, managing the water so that people have jobs and have a future. Yes. And that is the main vision that we have to have for Egypt and the world. But everybody is going to have to reorient themselves to what is going to be changing over the course of the weeks and months ahead as a result of this financial economic collapse coming from Europe.
Thank you very much, Lawrence Freeman, with the Africa Desk of the Executive Intelligence Review, joining us live from Baltimore. Big thank you to our guest in Cairo, political commentator, Mr. Saeed Sadek. Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for staying with another edition of The Debate from me, Homa Lizgi. It's goodbye.